We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show. Our next guest is hands down the most important journalist working today. Yeah, that's right. Her new book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America, is available now. Welcome back onto the Michael Coolidge Show from the Wall Street Journal, Kimberly Strassel.
Hello, it is so great to be here, Michael.
Yes, we're in the middle of your book, and it is a page-turner. Can't put it down. We just got it yesterday, and that's all I've been doing in between doing the show and you know, getting stuff done, is reading this book. And it is not necessarily about President Trump as much as it's about his critics, right? And you lay out in the beginning the difference between Trump critics and Trump haters. Tell our listeners what that difference is and why you devoted this entire book to the latter, the Trump haters.
Yeah, well, we've had lots of books about Donald Trump, in case anyone hadn't noticed. And I thought that maybe it was just time to have a book about the opposition. And that title you mentioned was chosen with great care, because when the publishers first came to me, the suggestion was that the subtitle read, How Trump Critics Are Breaking America. And I said, no, that's not right, because I am occasionally a Trump critic. You are occasionally a Trump critic.
Yeah.
I think most thinking people, that's how they view a presidency. They say good things when the president does something that they approve of, but they're able to make quality distinctions. But the resistance is something else. The haters are something else. These are the people that, from the moment Donald Trump won election, decided that he was illegitimate, that he was incorrectly occupying the White House. And along with that came the mentality that they were therefore entitled to break any boundary, cross any Rubicon, transgress any rule or regulation in their effort to get rid of him. And the point of the book is that they are doing great institutional damage as a result.
Yeah. I mean, you say that the resistance is going to have more damage to our country long term than anything they're accusing President Trump of doing as far as damage to our country goes.
Well, look, right, and I'm not going to suggest for 1 minute that Donald Trump isn't himself norm-breaking in his own way, but I would argue that if you step back and you look at his presidency objectively, that a lot of that norm-breaking has to do with his rhetoric, his tweets, his demeanor, his decision to punch back often. And I'd also argue a lot of Americans actually voted for him for that reason.
Yeah.
Institutionally, it's actually very hard to make the case that this administration has broken a lot of norms or undermined institutions, because the people who are running his departments, most of them are constitutional conservatives, and they've really kind of played it very straight and narrow, at least by comparison, certainly by comparison to the last administration we had, which ruled by executive order and regulation.
Well, yeah, you say that. I mean, you devote a whole chapter, too, to this idea that President Trump is an autocrat and, you know, we're getting closer to an autocracy here. He's a budding tyrant and all that. And it's like, he doesn't exercise this executive order stuff all that often. He doesn't even come close to that compared with Obama, right?
Oh, there's simply no evidence for it whatsoever, especially, I mean, look, you can't hold both of these thoughts in your head at the same time. You cannot say that Donald Trump is an autocrat or a dictator and reconcile it with complaining that he has cut federal regulation by a third, or that he has spent so much of his time appointing justices that are devoted to the text of the Constitution, or, for instance, allowing Americans to keep more of their taxpayer dollars. Dictators concentrate power around them. They don't want good judges on the bench. They want toadies around them, and that's not what he's done in his tenure. Now, turning back to your question about institutional damage on the other side, though, you know, it's not Donald Trump that has caused Americans to lose vast amounts of faith and respect for the FBI and the Department of Justice. That's on Jim Comey and Andy McCabe and their crazy counterintelligence investigation.
Yeah.
And it's not Donald Trump that's left our Senate confirmation process in shambles in the wake of the Brett Kavanaugh hearing. And it's not Donald Trump who is turning the impeachment power, which is an awesome and solemn power, into a partisan political weapon.
Yeah.
These are things that are going to last with us long beyond Donald Trump and his presidency.
There's so many things where the resistance and the Trump haters are questioning these basic fundamentals of our country and our Constitution. Like, you know, maybe we don't need an electoral college, or maybe we should add on a couple of Supreme Court justices. Like, they seem to be the ones trying to, like, you know, fundamentally transform everything this country is about. Certainly not President Trump. No, you said something that about the intelligence community that I thought was interesting. I think it was CNN yesterday. Brooke Baldwin was interviewing a female congressman, I believe from Michigan, who's a former CIA agent. And Brooke Baldwin played a clip of her talking at a town hall to a person who was more a Trump supporter, questioning the integrity of the intelligence community. And Brooke Baldwin's like, gosh, isn't that so sad? You're a former CIA agent and the intelligence community is questioned. Like, how do you get around the population's lack of trust in the intelligence community? Like, that they're basically implying that the questioner was crazy to question the intelligence community. It's like, no, it's because of so many of the actions of people like James Comey. And you write a whole chapter in your book about him. You call him J. Edgar Comey. Tell us why.
Well, no, that's absolutely right. And, you know, it's funny. I point out in the book that all these people would like to suggest that people no longer trust the FBI or the CIA because Trump is mean. And, I mean, come on. Look, the average American, just this statement alone is still astonishing. The FBI launched a counterintelligence investigation into an active presidential campaign. I mean, this is frightening stuff. And then one thing I try to do in the book, because I feel very deeply that people are angry about all of this, but sometimes they have a hard time articulating precisely what was wrong about it all. So I try very hard in the book to say what kind of boundaries were crossed, what rules or regulations were ignored, what are the actual things that they did wrong here. And Jim Comey is a classic, starting with the fact that he actually launched a counterintelligence investigation into a presidential campaign. Okay, that's just chutzpah at a level that just hard to even fathom. And then we find out that at least part of the basis of the surveillance warrants that they got permission to spy on American citizens with were based on opposition research from the rival presidential campaign. And then we find out that they're not honest with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court about where that information came from or the fact that Michael Steele, who wrote them, worked for the Clinton campaign. And then you go forward, fast forward beyond the election, and you have Jim Comey's decision to brief the president-elect in January of 2017 about Russian interference in the election and not tell him that his campaign was the subject of an investigation because he was clearly trying to trap him in some way.
Yeah.
And then you go forward and you see all of his machinations with his secret memos and then his leaks and his engineering of a special counsel.
The letters, you know, to himself and the news hook and all that stuff.
All of that. And I point out in here that the accountability also goes beyond James Comey. There were some of us, when Jim Comey was nominated, we warned Barack Obama, don't do this. This guy is an egomaniac, and he is out of control. And they nominated him and confirmed him anyway, and we got exactly what you might have expected we got. I mean, we should never have someone like that running such a powerful agency.
And that gets into this whole term, the deep state. And you devote a whole chapter in your book to that as well, the deep state, you put in quotes. And I mean, to me, that term perfectly describes the entity at play here in, as far as like the whole Trump hatred in Washington, especially with this whole Ukraine call thing. It's like the deep state at work. But it's often used by Trump haters as a cudgel against those of us who support the president. Like, it connotes like that we're some kind of conspiracy theorists or whatever. But, well, I mean, what else can you call what we're talking about here?
Well, look, it's a nice shorthand. I appreciate the semantics that they are bringing forth here. Because, look, traditionally, that term has always referred to sort of foreign third world countries where you have a kind of puppet figure who's in the position of authority, but really everything is run by a clack of people behind the scenes in the government. And that's how it's traditionally been used. Now, the point, though, is if they were not being quite so literal, and I think they know better, but they do it anyway, they know that what Trump means when he uses that word, and what many people mean when they use it by shorthand, is this unelected, unaccountable federal bureaucracy, grown in size and grown in power, and that almost uniformly hates Donald Trump. Well, you know, let me just, I like to be careful with language, many of whom dislike Donald Trump.
Yes.
And who have the ability behind the scenes to sow all kinds of mayhem. And, you know, these are the folks behind the flood of leaks that have come out that do real damage to our national intelligence and to our relationships with foreign countries. They're the people that have openly admitted before that they slow stuff down. They try to roadblock the agenda from within. They kind of brag that they can't be fired, so what are you going to do about it? They're the source of a lot of these whistleblower complaints, the most recent of which has now worked its way, obviously, into an impeachment proceeding. And there are also people who work with liberal activist groups, leaking them information and ginning up scandals to cause trouble for Trump administration secretaries.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... And, like, that to me describes this leaker. I mean, people call him this whistleblower, but, I mean, really, he was just a leaker about this Ukraine phone call. I heard that someone heard that he said he did this, you know, quid pro quo with the Ukrainian prime minister. And to me, it's like he is having an opinion that this new president broke the rules of Washington. You know, like, he broke our rules and... we are that entity that's going to be here long after this president, and we kind of are in charge of things because, like you alluded to, I can't be fired and whatever. So, yeah, I'm just going to really make a dramatic recount of this in a memo, and I'm going to send it up, and I'm going to send it to Adam Schiff. Anyway, I think that's what this whole impeachment thing is, and we're going to take a quick break here. On the other side of it, I want to ask our guest, Kim Strassel, resistance at all costs, how Trump haters are breaking America, where she sees this whole impeachment stuff going. This is the Michael Kugel Show. We'll be right back. We know we have a lot of listeners who are into the outdoors and especially hunting. We also know some of you are looking for love. But traditional, extremely wide net casting online dating sites can leave you feeling like a tadpole in an ocean. We are excited to say the buck stops here at huntingforconnections.com. Hunting for Connections is the online dating solution for people who live the outdoor lifestyle. Sign up today for a chance to win two separate multi-night amazing vacation packages at Harpole's Heartland Lodge, a premier hunting and game resort in central Illinois. Oh, and there are a lot of hunters and shooters on Hunting for Connections, but it isn't just for hunters. It's for people who like fishing, camping, biking, hiking, kayaking, archery, off-roading, horseback riding, geocaching. Just go to huntingforconnections.com and you'll see what I'm talking about. Huntingforconnections.com, dating for outdoor enthusiasts. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, and of course at huntingforconnections.com. Hunting for Connections is the place to hunt for your connection. And we're back on the Michael Kugel Show. Before the break, we were speaking with the one and only Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal and the author of the brand spanking new book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. I got to say, Kim, you are, I said this in the very beginning of the interview, how you're the most important journalist, and I really think you are, period. And as
you are.
But as far as like my consumption, like I think we're approximately the same age. I might be a little bit older, but I've been following politics and consuming it, you know, since I was like an adolescent. I was born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s, blah, blah, blah. To me, like, there's certain people that I have to consume every day. Like, I have to watch Tucker Carlson. I have to listen to as much of Rush as I can. I have to see what Molly Hemingway wrote. And I have to read your columns in the Wall Street Journal and your tweets. And as long as, like, if I could, if that was the only, if those four things were the only thing I consumed every single day, I would be okay. And listeners, I also give you that tip as well. And you've been on, I know Rush is a fan of yours. You've been on Tucker Carlson numerous times. Are you friends with or do you interact with Molly Hemingway ever when you're on?
Oh, Fox, yeah. She's a great woman. Yeah. And I've known her for quite a while. And, you know, speaking of just stars, and she is a star. That book that she did on the Kavanaugh trial is just remarkable. She's got amazing things. She's already amazing, and she's got an amazing future ahead of her, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that book was fantastic. We had her and Carrie Severino on, and quintessential. And, yeah, listeners, Christmas is coming up. You're going to get books for your friends and your family. I highly if you're going to get just two. Get the Molly Hemingway, Carrie Severino book about Brett Kavanaugh, and get Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America by Kimberly Strassel. So, before the break, I asked you, Kim, about this impeachment stuff and how it relates to the larger deep state and the intelligence community. Where do you see this going?
In terms of impeachment? Look, my view is that, first of all, Nancy Pelosi really would rather not be here if she still had her druthers. She was beaten into this by liberal activists and her left wing because she knows that there are some real damaging aspects to this, or could be politically, for the party. But now that they've done it, I do not see any way that they do not end up having a full impeachment vote in the end, because just imagine that. The left's heads would explode. So this is a freight train that's going to run right through to a vote. And that's why Mitch McConnell is already getting ready to have a Senate trial, because he knows that it's a done deal. But this impeachment discussion is really, it's one of the best examples, I think, in the book of how the left is changing our institutions, changing our tools of government in ways that are very frightening for the future. Because if you look at our two most modern impeachment hearings, both Nixon and Clinton, they were both conducted the same way. I understand, and Democrats are right, the Constitution does not tell them how they have to do it. But the reason that those two prior ones were done the way they were, in this, where people had a vote to authorize an inquiry, and where they were done in an enormously transparent fashion, was because they understood that the goal of impeachment, if you're going to go that, to convince the public of your case. And Nancy Pelosi and Democrats understand that they don't really have much of a case here, nothing. This is certainly not an impeachable offense. And so that's why they haven't convinced Americans, and it's why they're doing everything in secret and leaking things out to try to make it sound worse than it is. But they're losing the trust of more and more Americans. But I think the bigger problem is that they're setting a precedent here. And I keep reminding my friends on the left, impeachment is one of the biggest powers in the Constitution. It's an awesome power. The founders weren't even sure if they wanted to include it for their fear that it would be used for partisan reasons. And I keep telling my liberal friends, if you're going to go down this road, okay, let's just imagine that Joe Biden is elected president next year. But let's also imagine that the Republicans take the House. Should the first thing they do be file articles of impeachment for Joe Biden's quote-unquote corruption in the Ukraine? Because, I mean, I wouldn't go so far yet as to say that word, but I could find plenty of Republicans who would make that argument.
Yeah, I wouldn't, only because I believe that presidents' actions in office are what should be impeachable or not, as much as I think that this was shady and swampy, this whole Hunter Biden thing. But yeah, your overall point about, like, how are the, when the shoe's on the other foot, how is the right going to behave? And in so many ways, the Trump haters and the resistance aren't even thinking that far ahead, right? They just want Trump out at all costs, as you write.
And they want power. And you made a really good point earlier. I think in some ways, Donald Trump is an excuse. We've seen the left growing more militant over the years. And also, when most parties lose an election, they step back, they regroup, they do an autopsy, and they say, what did we do wrong? Why did we not connect with the American people?
The right did that in 2012.
They did. When Democrats lost in 2016, they never had that moment of reflection. Instead, they said that Donald Trump was illegitimate, and then they immediately proceeded to figure out a way that they could remove him from office and essentially do over the election. And when Elizabeth Warren talks about packing the Supreme Court, and when all of these candidates and candidates talk about getting rid of the Electoral College, these are not reforms that are designed to better the country. We all know that. This is about grabbing power that you haven't won legitimately and then holding on to it forever.
Yeah, And that is finally, I know we have to wrap up here, but that was going to be my kind of final question, and I'm so glad you got to that. That the future, I mean, at some point, Donald Trump's not going to be president anymore. It might be 2021, might be 2024. Do you think at that moment, the left, the Trump haters, the resistance, all those types, are they at least, especially if he wins re-election, are enough of them going to get how much of this country they don't understand or don't care to understand? That's one of the things that is so offensive to those of us who live in quote-unquote flyover country, where we do, where most of our listeners do, and we don't have anyone really caring about our viewpoint, or we didn't anyway, as far as presidential politics goes, until Donald Trump came along. And yeah, we all have criticisms of him personally, but man, it's so great to have somebody who is standing up for and listening to those of us who don't live in big, giant cities like New York, LA, and yes, even Chicago. But the left, like, if Hillary had won, because she didn't campaign outside of cities in so many ways, in the Midwest especially, she would have governed ignoring us. And I worry about the next Democrat president. I'm sure in our lifetimes we'll have one. Has Trump at least reminded them that we exist, or no? Do you think they're going to go right back to the perspective and the paradigm of Obama and the what the Hillary Clinton presidency could be like? I hope I'm asking that. I know that was a long way to ask that question, but I
no,
hope
it's
you know
a very, very good question. You always ask good questions, Michael.
Oh, thank you.
So, look, I think you make a really important point. It is astonishing to me how far left the Democratic primary field has moved. The party, the center of gravity of the party, is not even on the same like compass point anymore as where it was just a couple of years ago. I mean, we have people up there all agreeing that they're going to entirely get rid of fossil fuels and get rid of privatized health care. And, I mean, we're having some debates on this, but even the pragmatists, the quote-unquote pragmatists on the stage, are so far left of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, it's insane. I fear for what that means for the party, and were they to get elected, what that means for the future of the country, because Democrats are no longer talking about working in center-left. They're talking about radically restructuring the nation, whether it be our financial markets, whether it be our tax policy, whether it be our healthcare system. But the other thing that I have to be honest with you, Michael, that concerns me equally is that, and I hear this now from a huge number of people from parts of the country where you are, I split my time between my home in Washington, D.C. and a house I have in Alaska, so I hear it up there a lot. People are very concerned. This is becoming, for them, not even so much about Donald Trump. It's becoming their fear that if a Democrat were to win, that it would put a seal of approval on the tactics that they used over the past 3 years.
Yes.
And it would be a green light to them to continue doing it. And when I talk to Americans, even Americans that are on the fence about Donald Trump, that is beginning to be, to them, a deciding factor and a question in their vote.
That is extremely well put. And listeners, the entire book, it doesn't get any better than, I promise, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. Kimberly Strassel, an absolute honor to have you back on the show. Best of luck with the book. And anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
No, just how much I love the show. Everybody listen to the Michael Coolidge Show. It is very informative.
Oh, I have the biggest smile on my face because I have such admiration for everything you do. Kim Strassel, we will be right back on the Michael Coolidge Show. Stay with us.